The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests of Reality Realty are not necessarily the views or opinions of Northumberland 89.7 FM. The information given is designed to be informative and helpful. You should always consult a professional when buying or selling your home. Hello, Northumberland County, and welcome to Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's real estate talk show, where we take on, talk about, and interview guests on all things real estate with a direct focus on Northumberland County and all the communities within it. I'm Dale Bryant, and I'm a real estate broker, and my co-host is Dave Smith, certified home inspector. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Dale.
How are you?
I am nice and warm. The studio is like July in here.
Yeah, isn't that unusual? Imagine our surprise. So, Dave, early last week, I was driving around the neighborhood, and I noticed one of those lawn care trucks that have that sort of transparent tank in the back where you can semi-see the liquid sloshing around. I have snow and ice still in my backyard. What was that guy doing driving around our neighborhood? Does he have a de-icing formula that he sprays on the lawn so you can get a green lawn quicker and faster?
He might be using, and I'm just guessing here, he may be using a pre-emergent crabgrass spray, which you have to get on very, very, very early. You have to get it on before you see any green at all, because it is actually not a killer, it's a pre-emergent. So what it does is it forms a barrier on your lawn, so when the crabgrass comes up, which comes up very, very quickly, and it hits this barrier and kills it off, it's the only way to deter crabgrass from taking over your lawn.
Can you spray it on the snow and ice?
You can, if there's crabgrass contained within the snow and ice, yes.
Well, there you go. Learn something new. I thought it was odd, but maybe it's not as odd as I thought it was. So today's show, Dave, very excited about today's show. As I always say, I'm excited about the show. Yeah. Because today is a very special day because we have a mortgage professional sitting with us today.
Yes.
And it's Carol Ann Bryant. She's a mortgage broker with the Mortgage Wellness Group on Elgin Street here in Coburg. And we'll be talking to Carol Ann about interest rates, pre-approvals, and credit bureaus. Credit bureaus. No, that's like going to the dentist, isn't it, when you have to start talking about your credit bureau?
I think you want to be careful today, Dale. You want to be very careful about the things you say.
Maybe so. As we always are, right, Dave? As we always are. Also, we'll be covering our home inspection tip of the week, snapshot of today's residential real estate market here in Northumberland County, and our points to ponder. So, Dave, why don't you start us off with the home inspection tip of the week?
Absolutely, Dale. For those of you keeping track at home, and I know most of you will be pulling out your scorecards right now, this will be part 1456, part 1456 of my 2,394-part series. Be a home inspector for a day or at least an hour. And my inspection tip of the week this week is hug a tree, but don't let it hug you back. You like that, Dale? I'm really coming quick with these.
It's a little warm and fuzzy sort of title.
What I'm talking about is, of course, trees on your property, in and around your home. Bountiful, healthy trees, of course, can add beauty and value to a home. We love them. When they're placed properly around a home, they can actually help reduce your heating and air conditioning demands considerably. Most homeowners are content to leave healthy trees alone, but trees and shrubs must be removed if they become safety risks or pose other threats to your home. They can drag or rub against your roof, siding, trough, trim, all of the exterior of the home, causing premature aging and damages. The leaves can fill your eaves trough, contributing to ineffective drainage and water-related damages, and branches can affect power lines, an obvious safety hazard, and I see that all too often. They can also serve as a pathway to your rooftop for rodents like squirrels and raccoons and even the occasional wolverine, Dale.
Wolverine. In Coburg?
I haven't seen a lot of them, but I'm just flying that flag for you. Just want to see if you're awake over there.
Yeah, Dale. Absolutely.
Shrubs and brush can obscure the foundation, damage the foundation, and inhibit ventilation of a high-efficiency furnace or gas hot water tank. And we've talked about this when it comes to snow, but a lot of people, because these things on the outside of your house, air conditioning, these vent pipes coming out through your house, they're not the prettiest things. Some people like to plant shrubs, et cetera, around them, plantings, but you want to make sure you don't obscure the ability of these venting to do what they were intended to do. And then, of course, below the soil, roots of all kinds can damage sewer lines. And a lot of people don't realize this, even in town. As a homeowner, you can be responsible for repairs on lines going out to the street by trees on your property. Just because it's outside your house, it does not mean that it's you're not responsible for the repairs should that line be damaged by something on your property. Next week's tip, I'm going to talk a little bit about when and why to hire an arborist to protect your home and property. Hug a tree, Dale. Don't let them hug you back. My home inspection tip of the week.
Very interesting, Dave. Now, maybe no wolverines, but wasn't it just a couple years back that there was a sighting of a cougar in Castleton?
That's, I think it was. It was the, I think, known as the Castleton Cougar.
The Castleton Cougar, right.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at a snapshot of today's residential real estate market here in Northumberland County. So the market has been ramping up big time. And over the past month, there has been 93 residential listings that have sold over the past month. And when I look back, say, 8-9 weeks ago when we were at 35, and the numbers have been just climbing since then. So 93.
That's almost 20. It's almost a 20% increase.
Fast math, Dave. 93 solds in the month of March. Presently, we have an inventory of 344 residential listings for sale in Northumberland County. And what is the price of your home in comparison to the average price over the past year? Well, the average asking price over the past year has been on average $299,000, and people have been receiving approximately $289,000 for those homes. So they're receiving about 96.7% of their asking price in 81 days. So that'll give you an idea of where your home may be in relation to the average. The absorption rate we're at today is at 27%, and that puts us in definitely in a seller's market. We have more buyers than we have inventory here in Northumberland County right now. And these statistics and the information required to calculate the absorption rate come to us from the Northumberland Hills Association of Realtors, and Jeanette and Lynn at the board office. They do an amazing job to keep us realtors informed and updated on what's going on in general. Today's mortgage rates, the best 5-year fixed rate is now at 2.49%, and the best 5-year variable rate is at 2%. And the way they figure that out, they take the prime, which is 2.85, and they apply a discount, and the discount today is 0.85. And today's mortgage rates come to us from Mortgage Broker and our guest today, Carol Ann Bryant, here in Northumberland County. And just a note on those rates, Dave, not everybody qualifies for the best. There's a lot of different things that have to be looked at to qualify for those best rates. Reality Realty's points to ponder. Dave, do you ever get anybody asking you what the difference is between a real estate sales rep and a real estate broker?
I ask that question of you, Mr. Bryant. I honestly, as coming into this industry, I did not really know what the difference was. I did recognize that there was a broker in every office, but I did not know the difference. So I'm hoping, I'm with bated breath, that you're actually going to explain that to me.
You mean you forgot the last time?
I just wanted to expand for the viewing audience.
Just see if I stick to the same story, maybe. So every now and again, people will ask me the difference between a real estate sales representative and a real estate broker. So basically, let's take a look. If you were considering becoming a realtor, the very first license you would apply for and work towards would be your sales representative license. And you would have to take 4 different courses. Each course has a 3-hour exam that you write, and the courses cost anywhere between $400 and $520 a course. So when you're done those courses and you pass, then you need to find a brokerage to work with. And over the next 2 years, as you're gaining some experience in real estate, there's three more courses a person would take during this two-year articling period with exams again. Now, once you're done that and you are licensed, fully licensed as a sales representative, then you can take the broker courses. And the broker course is a 7.5-day in-class course, so a 60-hour course. And it's a little more costly. It's a $900 course. And there's also an elective course to take. So the big difference is it's education, it's training, it's resources that realtor was willing to put out. Now, the other confusing thing can be all the different letters that realtors have behind their names, because there's so many companies and so many organizations who create training, create these designations, obviously to make a little money, and hopefully to educate the real estate industry. And so I just have a few here, Dave. I thought I'd go over. You might run across a realtor with an ABR, which is an accredited buyer's representative designation. That realtor has taken about 12 hours online or a couple days in class and spent their money, about $300 to get that designation. There's also one elective course you would have to take for an ABR. Then there's an SRS, which is a seller's representative specialist. So instead of specializing with the buyers, you're specializing with sellers. Once again, same kind of prerequisites to get that. Another designation, an SRES. It sounds a lot like the SRS, but it's very different. This is for someone wanting to work with seniors. Specifically,
then?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they don't have to just work with seniors, but they would have that extra bit of training on what seniors need typically in a transaction.
That's pretty cool. I did not know that existed.
Yeah. So that's a seniors real estate specialist. There's an ePro, which they would learn about the internet and working social media. That's a lot of the course. There's a certified luxury home marketing specialist.
I see a few of those signs around.
For the higher end, right? And then there's one that's very different than all of those. It's an FRI, which is a fellow of the Real Estate Institute of Canada. Now, this takes a little bit more work to get at that. You need three letters of recommendation from either an office manager or broker of record, fellow realtor, or a past client. There's an interview process. This particular FRI designation requires 5 years in the industry. And there's several courses, a 2-day real estate investment course, a 3-day consumer behavior and negotiating course. Then you have to write a paper after that one. There's legal issues in real estate, which is a 2-day course, and you write another paper. A 3-day ethics and business practice course with an exam, and two additional university or college electives with real estate law or a business law course. So they're all very different. I think the general public, it's hard for them to know, or even if they care, right?
Oh, well, I think they would. It's awareness, and I think it's important that you define these. I think this is a great little job you've done here. I might do a similar thing for home inspection, because there's an awful lot of certifications that are necessary for various aspects of a home, a rural property, commercial building. So maybe I'll touch on that, but I like the way you've structured this. There's a lot of good stuff there.
Interesting stuff that you wouldn't normally know. And one thing I know is the more you know about real estate, the more you realize you need to learn more. There's so much at stake in what we do.
Right. Well, this is Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio. Join Dale and myself. After this short break, we're going to be talking with mortgage professional Carol Ann Bryant, broker with the Mortgage Wellness Group on Elgin Street, right here in Coburg.
For over 35 years, Northumberland Security Incorporated has been providing everything necessary for physical and electronic security, from locks, alarms, safes, access control to surveillance systems, and handicap door operators. We are virtually a one-stop personal and property security center, operating from Pickering to Peterborough to Picton and everywhere in between. Visit us at 22 King Street West in Coburg, online at northumberlandsecurity.com or call 905-372-8951, the professional security team.
Starting your own business is an exciting time in your life, but are you aware of your legal responsibilities as a business owner? Jim McGrath specializes in business law and knows what needs to be done to protect you and your investment. Jim has been a lawyer for over 30 years and understands the law, so you don't have to. As a local resident and an entrepreneur himself, Jim McGrath is a trusted source in our community for business owners just like you. Call 905-373-1999 and let Jim McGrath give you the legal peace of mind you need.
The story you are about to hear is true.
Ed White fixed my refrigerator.
And?
He did a great job. Now I don't need to buy a new fridge. And if I don't get a new fridge, then I won't need a whole new kitchen to go with it. So my guy is saying Ed White saved him $20,000.
Guys, save 20 grand. Call Ed White Appliance Service in Port Hope at 905-885-7109.
Yes, it is worth fixing.
Welcome back. This is Dale Bryant and Dave Smith on Reality Realty, Northumberland 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. Our guest today is Carol Ann Bryant, mortgage broker with Mortgage Wellness Group at 975 Elgin Street in Coburg. Carol Ann, she is a returning guest, and Carol Ann is my wife. And Carol Ann supplies us with the mortgage rates each week for our snapshot segment. We look at when we look at the residential real estate market today. So, Carol Ann, welcome back. Thanks for coming back to the show.
Thank you for having me, and good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. So, Carol Ann, the rates. Thank you for supplying us always with those mortgage rates. Mm-hmm. There's more than just a 5-year fixed and a 5-year variable. I think we report on that because they're the most common rates that people tend to gravitate towards.
They are, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the different rates that are available today that we don't necessarily talk about?
Well, you can get a term anywhere from 6 to 10 years. And the 5-year is what people tend to gravitate towards. Right now, there's lenders that are offering good rates on the 2, 3, and 4-year fix. So you can get a 2-year for 2.24, a 3-year for 2.35, and a 4-year for 2.54 if you qualify. When you take a term that's less than a five-year fixed, or you take the variable, you have to qualify at the Bank of Canada rate, which is currently 4.74%. So that sometimes makes a difference for people who may want a term less than 5 years, but it doesn't work, so then they have to take the 5-year fixed. Also, there's some people that prefer a longer term, so you can get a 7-year fixed for 3.44 or a 10-year at 3.84.
What kind of person would be looking for a 7 or a 10-year typically?
Yeah, usually it's an investor who has an investment property and they want to know what their costs are going to be over that period of time.
And how about those shorter terms? Who would typically be looking at those shorter terms?
Right. So that would be someone who is not planning on staying in their house for the next 5 years or longer, or perhaps you're coming up for renewal and you're uncertain as to whether or not you're going to move or not. Maybe you want to just take a 1-year term because you don't want to incur that penalty. If you renew again for another 5 years and then you find a house and, you know, you have this penalty that you have to pay. So that's a strategy that some people can use. You could also, if you think you're going to move fairly soon, you could do a 6-month open and just keep doing that for just a short period of time.
So my eyes are opened in discussions about this in the past. So the penalties in some cases can be fairly substantial. And mm-hmm. in some cases, they're directly related to the rate itself. Is that fair to say? Like there are some rates that you may get where the penalty would be, you better be sure you're going to stay in that house for 5 years, I guess is what I'm trying to say, because the penalty would be so severe that any benefits from that lower rate would be wiped out.
Yeah, it can be. And again, this is where you really want to have that discussion with whoever you're arranging your financing with. Myself, I make sure I have that discussion with my clients. because, you know, some people with the best of intentions, oh, yes, we're going to, you know, this is our forever home.
Right.
And then something happens.
Life changes.
Yeah, the job. Or maybe 3 years in, they decide they would like to do some improvements to the home. So there are some options. You don't always have to break the mortgage. When you're dealing with a broker, your penalty, though, is based on what the broker rate is at that time and not the posted rate. And that's an important thing to know, because if your penalty is based on the posted rate, that's where you see sometimes in the news these people that have, you know, $14,000 penalty, something like that, right? So you just need to make sure you understand that component of your product.
Okay. Pre-approval. So can we talk a little bit about what makes up a pre-approval, and then maybe I'll do a little follow-up with pre-approval versus pre-qualified. But pre-approval.
And if I could just step in, last time Carol Ann was here, we started to talk about pre-approvals just at the end of the show, and I think we discovered there was so much more we could have talked about. And when you think about it, a pre-approval, you just go to your lender, your broker, your mortgage agent, your bank, your trust company, whoever, you get qualified, end of story. But all three of us sitting here know there's a whole lot more to that story, and that's what makes it noteworthy and worthwhile talking about, correct?
Right, yeah. So you could look at it as there's sort of two types of a pre-approval. Some people say pre-qualify. It doesn't really matter what the term is. What you need to know is, you know, the one aspect is you just give your income information. Numbers are put into, you know, a calculator or a system or whatever, and you're told this is the maximum loan amount you would qualify for. You haven't shown any proof of that income. You haven't talked about where your down payment is coming from. You haven't done any of that. It's just basically a guideline that tells you we can look at houses in this price range. The deeper one is when you go to whoever you're dealing with, you bring your income, proof of your income. You talk about where your down payment is coming from, because that can be a tricky thing that can trip you up. And you have like a more detailed sort of discussion. And if that is done properly, you have the confidence to go out and look and know that you are qualified. But then there's an extra step to that, which gets more complicated. If you have less than 20% for a down payment, you have to be approved by the insurer as well. And the property has to be approved as well. So when you go to get a pre-qualification or pre-approval, you don't necessarily have a property in mind. So
how can you get an approval on a property?
Yeah, so that component. Now that it doesn't happen often that the property is the reason the deal fails, but it does happen. It has happened.
Carol Ann, you mentioned the down payment source,
right,
and how that could be important to the actual lender. What do you mean when you say that? What are some scenarios that could happen?
So is the down payment coming from money that you have saved yourself? Is the down payment coming from your RSP? Is your down payment coming from family member, mother, mom and dad? Are they contributing to the down payment? Are you borrowing a portion of the down payment from, because you're allowed to do that, from a credit card or a line of credit or just a loan? All of those things are important to discuss because they require certain types of paperwork to prove where the down payment is coming from. And if that part isn't handled properly, then that can potentially cause a problem.
What about borrowing from mom and dad versus mom and dad giving you some money?
So when you are saying that you have gifted funds for your down payment, the meaning of that is you are not paying that back. That is truly a gift, and nobody is expecting to have that money returned to them.
So in that situation, in today's market, so it would be best if mom and dad have always said to you, we're going to give you $20,000 when you decide to buy a house. Would the smart purchaser then say, time go to mom and dad and get that money and get it into an account to begin with a statement from mom and dad that it was a gift? Like, would the paperwork, a statement, a signed document from whoever's gifting it to you, and the money showing in your bank balance, is that, would that be enough in that situation? Or?
So every lender has a gift letter that you have to get filled out. Depending on, you know, that is part of it too. When you're depositing money into your bank account, you have to be careful with that too, because if you don't if the timing isn't done correctly, it could open you up to having to provide further documentation. So you can either have, you know, mom and dad hang on to that money and put it into your bank account at a, you know, at a certain time before closing. Sometimes the bank that you're borrowing the money from then will require a bank statement from mom and dad to show that the money was in their account and has been transferred out. If you have a long closing and the money is in your account 3 months before closing, because most institutions want a 3 month history of your bank account, then that doesn't matter so much because the money was in there prior to the 3 months. Is any large deposits that have gone into your account during that 3 month period before closing that the lenders need to track, where did that come from?
And is that a product of the last 4 or 5 years, or a lot of the financial crisis in the U.S. or is that always?
It's a law. It's a government law. Anti-money laundering and terrorist acts. So you have to track the source of funds into accounts.
Caroline, when you mentioned about to get a thorough pre-approval, that you need to come in with all your documents, documents being, I guess, letter of employment, documents being some sort of proof from your income tax, what other documents could there be? And what are you actually looking for on those documents? Because I know I've heard you before say that the document isn't complete. It won't satisfy the lender. Mm-hmm.
Letter of employment has to be on company letterhead, has to state when you were hired, what your position is. If you have guaranteed hours, that's important. And what is your rate of pay? And then who to contact in the company to verify that.
Okay, so we're going to take a break, and what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about your like a salary versus an hourly employee, people that are moving from one location to another, or people that have started a new job. This is Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Join Dale and me and Carol Ann after this short break, and we'll continue to talk about pre-approvals, the mortgage insurer, credit scores, and bureaus.
Are you a business owner thinking of retiring or selling your business within the next 3 years? If so, call Sunbelt Business Brokers. Their team of professionals make it a worry-free, confidential process and ensure that you end up with maximum dollars. In the past year, they've helped more than 3,000 business owners achieve their goals. Advanced planning can save on taxes and minimize risk. Sunbelt works confidentially, so your clients, staff, and suppliers will not know that you are selling. Call Sunbelt today at 1-888-647-7182 or check sunbeltcanada.com.
All you fat cats, you just gotta be cool, mama. Be here and I'll keep you tight and out of sight on Uncle Charlie's Cosmic Circus. Wednesday nights, 9 to midnight, where I'm gonna shake the tree from the roots and rake up the fruits. Rip it up out of the ground and find out what's going down. Wednesdays, 9 to midnight with me, Uncle Charlie. Don't miss it. You don't want to be no jive turkey now, do ya? Ooh, I nailed that one.
Welcome back. This is Dale Bryant and Dave Smith on Reality Realty, Northumberland, 89.7 FM's local real estate talk. We're picking up from where we left off last segment with mortgage professional Carol Ann Bryant, who is a mortgage broker with the Mortgage Wellness Group here on Elgin Street, right across from where we're broadcasting on 89.7 FM. So, Carol Ann, we were just talking about making sure that all those documents in a pre-approval are going to be acceptable by the lender. And you were talking about the letter of employment, what that should look like. What about the lender typically is going to want some bank statements? What do you ever find that there can be issues with a bank statement? Are there things people need to be aware of?
Yes. This is one of the biggest things that can cause a problem, especially if somebody is waiting. They're still trying to accumulate their funds for the down payment, and it's going to happen a little bit closer to closing, and then all of a sudden, you know, panic sets in. We cannot accept any bank statements that have anything blacked out on them. A lot of people think, why does the institution need to know that I've gone to Tim Hortons this week? Or you just can't black stuff out.
It's like, what are you hiding?
I guess. But, you know, they're really not looking at, you know, that sort of thing. They're looking for the source of your down payment. And sometimes they're looking to confirm that your pay is going into your account. Sometimes we need to use bank statements for that purpose to show pay or pension. That's another thing that they'll look for, CPP and old age security going into your account. So no blacking out. Your name has to be on the statement. And this is a common thing I find, because so many people do online banking, and so they just print off. Not many people get paper copies of their bank statement mailed to them anymore. So oftentimes when you print it off online, your name isn't on there. So how do you get around that? Well, if your account number is on that, then you can link yourself to that account with a void check, perhaps. What if your account number doesn't show on there? Well, then you're going to have to go to the bank and get some sort of proof of account ownership. Or maybe you have something on file from when you set up that account. But we can't be sending in bank statements that have nobody's name on it. They could be anybody's bank statement, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So when it comes to employment, are the requirements different for an hourly or a salaried employee or a commissioned employee? Are the requirements different as a rule?
Yep. So hourly, basically what the lenders are looking for are do you have guaranteed hours, and they want to see, you know, how much per hour you're making. Salary, typically, you know, letter of employment again and a current pay stub, but sometimes salary employees will get a bonus depending on what type of work they're in. So if we need to use that bonus income to add to the base salary, there has to be a two-year history of it. So we have to show a two-year history, and we can show that with notice of assessments. Commission, same thing, two-year history. Any job where your income fluctuates, or even someone who's working part-time and the hours sort of fluctuate, any kind of job like that where the income is fluctuating and or possibly not consistent, a seasonal worker where they're laid off for a period of time, be prepared to show a two-year history of your income. Sometimes your notice of assessment is sufficient for that. Sometimes the lenders will want to see your full T1 generals. So if you're just prepared with that documentation ahead of time, it'll make your life simpler.
Tell me, Carolyn, so a two-year history, and you talk about fluctuating income. So if the lender sees that this past year has been much less than the prior year,
right,
Will they just be going off of last year's income, as opposed to if your income has been climbing, will they then average it?
That's a good question. Yeah. So if your notice of assessment shows a lower income for that present year, they will use that lower income. If it has been consistent or it has climbed up, then they do a two-year average.
Our most recent situation, we sold our business, and both my wife and I were effectively unemployed because we sold the business. She did get a full-time job, but I was starting off in obviously a new business with no promise of positive cash flow for some time. Didn't realize it, frankly, because we'd always had no problem getting a mortgage. But, you know, it certainly was an issue when we came to get those approvals, because I just had a lot of assumptions. And I think there's a lot of folks out there that would have those assumptions, that their credit rating, quote unquote, and I'm just using it as a layman's term, and their record and their history should be enough. But it's not, is it?
No. You have to look at it from the eyes of the lender. They're about to lend you a substantial amount of money. They need to know that you're going to be able to pay that back. So you have to prove that to them, right? So it would be the same thing as if I came to you, Dave, and I said, could you lend me $200,000? Trust me, I have a job, I can pay you back.
I've known you a long time, right?
We've known each other for a long time. You likely would want to see proof that I can pay you back. You likely wouldn't just do a handshake and say, yes, I trust you. And you know,
frankly,
off we go.
I think it's fair to say if a friend asked us for a substantial amount of money, we'd probably be pickier and maybe a little bossier about some proof than necessarily a financial institution would be if you put the two things side by side.
The financial institutions are pretty pretty diligent in checking.
Yeah.
But so you have to look at it that way. So some people get their back up and say, why do they need to know so much about me? This is intrusive. They don't need to know this. Well, so just think about it that way. Would you personally lend somebody a huge amount of money and not want any sort of confirmation that that can be paid back?
It would be all, and because looking at it from a real person perspective, I've got a home myself I have to pay for. I've got a family I'm responsible for. Well, the financial institutions themselves have people that they're responsible for.
That's right.
Right? So It's really, it's just about thinking of it. And that's a really good way of putting it. In saying that, marketing now, I went into, not to pick on Tim Hortons because I love Tim Hortons and I couldn't survive without them, I'll say. Went in there the other day, grabbed a coffee, and there's a guy in the line with a credit card or with a clipboard, and he wants me to sign up for the new Tim Hortons MasterCard, I think is what it was. So
right. Tim Hortons MasterCard.
But this is a big, big part of our society now. And there's a lot of people that have trouble saying no. Mm-hmm. So what about that young couple? What about that young single person that has that pocket full of credit cards? They've got credit cards in there that literally still have the 1-800 sticker on them that they haven't even called to activate that card. They just took the card just to get that person with the clipboard to leave them alone. Is that a threat? Is that an issue for someone looking at getting a mortgage when you have, let's just say, 10 or 12 credit cards, maybe only one or two of them you use regularly, but the other ones actually have that extension out there. This is available credit. Is that an issue?
Yes. Again, the person who is looking at your application, who is the underwriter at the financial institution, so they're underwriting the deal to see if it's something that would get approved, they have to mitigate that. So they have to take a look and say, worst case scenario, if these people ran those credit cards right up to the max, could they still make their mortgage payment? Now, the reality is they're not run up at the time. And maybe, like you say, they haven't even been activated. But they do take a look at that. And it could potentially harm you. You really want to have, at least two things reporting on your credit bureau. You don't need to have a whole host of items. And you likely shouldn't, because that can be. Now, if you're responsible, and again, if it's a first-time home buyer, maybe they haven't had that credit for very long, so the lender can't look at that and see the history of how that credit's been used. Someone who has been, a several-time homeowner, the history might be longer on their credit, and the lender can look at that and say, okay, they've been responsible over the years with their credit. They're not running it up to the max. They're not having to pay their monthly bills with their credit cards. So there's a lot that goes into looking at that. And there are a lot of misconceptions about what you should do with your credit as well.
There's a misconception that I would really like to see if you can answer. And I hope that I'm not going to put you on the spot here. But there are ways of canceling those cards. But you also have to be careful. And please correct me if I'm wrong, because I would like the answer. If you do have these cards in your pocket from every brand there is out there, and you decide to go in and get rid of them because you don't use them, is there a right and a wrong way of canceling those credit cards? Or is that really just an urban myth that canceling a credit card can hurt your credit rating, even if you canceled it just because you didn't want to have it in your wallet anymore?
It can drop your score temporarily. So you might want to keep some things open and cut up the card and never use it, because, again, you're trying to show a history of how you use credit. So if all of a sudden the lender sees that you've gone and canceled, five or six cards, they might view that as you're worried that you have that credit available to you.
Okay. So because I'm a binge guy, I would do everything all at once. That would be my thing. I'm doing this right now.
Clean up house.
Clean up house. And I might be doing it for all the right reasons. But In saying that, I have two active cards. You know, I've got a Visa and a MasterCard like everyone else, or most everyone else. Is the word of caution here then is maybe think about that person with a clipboard and really think about whether or not you want to get that free gift before you actually sign up for that card.
Yes.
This is you're on the line. That person obviously is trying to get that. They get one more application filled out and they get a free canoe. But maybe you should be concerned more about your credit rating and how this affects you.
Absolutely.
Okay. So that's a good lesson.
I think it's more, Dave, than just applying for it. I think it's actually, I mean, more than receiving it, I think it's even applying for it. If the lenders see on your credit check, and correct me if I'm wrong, Carolyn, if they see you've been actively pursuing
more
credit cards,
that
can hurt your credit score
as
well.
Yes, it can drop your score, the number of inquiries that you have on your bureau. You want to keep them to a minimum over the course of a year. Yeah, you don't want to be, because the lenders look at that as you're a credit seeker.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the thing that, you know, most people have to understand, especially the younger folks, is they're really just entering into this world. Let's just say you have eight cards in your wallet. You only use two of them, but you've got six cards that have even only a $1,500 or $2,000 limit. You could go out in an hour, and you could all of a sudden run up $12,000 of the credit without making a single phone call. You can do that. And that's the fear here is you've got $12,000 at your disposal that you could run up. And that's going to count if you walk into the mortgage office or go to get a mortgage tomorrow. That's going to show up, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Carolyn, back to this pre-approval. Mm-hmm. You were mentioning you need to be pre-approved by the lender as well as by the insurer.
Right.
Now, the insurers, can you just, for the folks listening, explain who the insurers are? And then also, is the criteria different potentially for a lender and for the insurer?
Okay. So there are three insurers in Canada. Probably the one that most people are the most familiar with is CMHC, which is a Crown Corporation. They're usually in the news the most. There are two private insurers, Canada Guarantee, which has the Ontario Teachers Pension Plan with it. And then there's Genworth. So there are three insurers. Some lenders will use all three insurers. Some of them will use two, but they have their preferred one that they always try and get approval at first. And so it really depends on the lender, who they are tied in with.
So there isn't one, like a governing body, there isn't one boss of that group then, per se?
No, there's the private ones, and then there's the government one, the CMHC.
So and back to, is the criteria the lenders are looking for, can it vary from the criteria the insurer is looking for?
Yeah, so that's where it gets a little bit complicated too. So when you're getting this, this pre-qualification where you're just spitting numbers into a calculation, you're not necessarily taking into account the policies that the lenders have. And the lenders have their own specific policy. And if you pass that, then you go on to the insurer. And the insurer has perhaps different criteria as well.
Great stuff. You've been listening to Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 Truly Local Radio. Join Carol Ann, Dale, and myself after this short break, and we'll be looking at your credit score and the credit bureau.
For over 25 years, Pritchard's Climate Care has been your personal climate expert in the Northumberland area. Pritchard's offers complete heating and air conditioning service and repair for your home or business. We make sure the air you breathe is healthy and comfortable. Pritchard's Climate Care has been one of Southern Ontario's most trusted installers of heating and air conditioning products. Sign up for our We Care maintenance plans and get your furnace service for half off our regular special price. Pritchard's Climate Care. We're not just your climate experts, we're your neighbors. Call us at 905-885-8216 today.
Jim McGrath understands that as much as we don't want to talk about it, wills and estate planning is a responsible thing to do for you and your family. With his help, you can reflect on your values and wishes and have a legal direction to let others know what kind of health and personal care you would want if you could not speak for yourself. Jim McGrath has been a lawyer for over 30 years, and he understands the law, so you don't have to. You owe it to yourself and your loved ones to call Jim McGrath today at 905-373-1999.
Kurt, baby, it's your agent. You got big contract changes coming to your show, The Music Scene, on 89.7.
Big changes. Am I still Monday nights?
Well, you know it.
10 to 12?
You got it, baby.
Do I still play the best of today's modern rock?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what have you got for me?
Well, pants are no longer mandatory outside. Now, I got a nice little booth set up for you right in the parking lot so we can...
Wait. Did you just say outside?
Yeah. Is there a problem with that?
Have you seen the weather? It's going to be like minus something tonight.
Listen, Kurt, I'm not a weatherman. I'm an agent man. I did the best I could.
I got to get a new agent.
But until I do, continue to listen to my show Monday nights 10 to 12 here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Welcome back to Reality Realty. Dave Smith, Dale Bryant, and our guest today is mortgage professional and returning guest Carol Ann Bryant from the Mortgage Wellness Group right here in Northumberland County. Carol Ann, credit cards, there's an old sort of an old adage out there. I think I may have even told my own kids this. Is it a good idea when a teenager gets close to the 20s to get a credit card as a way of building a credit score or building a good reputation, I suppose, from a credit perspective? Is it a good idea? Is it a good thing to start rather than, say, doing nothing until you actually need a credit card?
Right. It's kind of a necessary evil, credit and credit cards, because if down the road they want to get a mortgage and they've been paying cash for everything, which is, great. They're not
in debt.
Which
is sad because it's sort of converse to what you would expect, but
yeah,
it's the way of the world, I suppose.
If they've been paying cash for everything, they will have no credit score.
Well, you don't show up anywhere.
Yeah. And right. So then they go to get a mortgage and it's not going to happen. So the key is to be responsible about that. The credit card companies are very great at extending credit to you. And then, you're a fantastic customer. We're going to increase your limit. That's not necessary. If you have something around the $1,500 as a minimum limit, on a couple of cards, that's good. And really, you need to have, again, I keep going back to a two-year history of using that credit. Something that has just been opened and you've only been using it for 6 months is not going to generate much of a score and is really not going to give the lender any indication of how well you utilize that credit. Planning ahead is a very good thing, to plan ahead.
I find it horrifying that a lender, a credit card company, can elevate your credit at unbelievable rate. I know there was a point there where I had a card, I won't say the brand, but I had a card that actually grew to a $30,000 limit without mm-hmm. me even... I mean, I'm sure there was a notice, there was a letter, there was something attached to my statement.
To your statement, yeah.
I did not request that card to elevate to that level. And $30,000... is insane to me. Mm-hmm. And I think, in my opinion, I think it should never be allowed. But it does happen. And a young person getting in, they enter into this world. And I know that mm-hmm. first couple of years, they're held under tight mm-hmm. watch, which is good for them and smart business from the credit card perspective. But this, when you get up into, well, I'm over 30 now. When you get over 30.
You're kidding.
but the idea of elevating somebody's in big, huge chunks of money to me is obscene and almost wrong. At 28% interest. Yeah. It's just wrong as far as I'm concerned.
Now, was that since you became a famous radio personality?
A lot of it is. It's fame. Dale, it's the price of fame.
So, Karen.
You can request that you have a max and you say to them, this is what I want. I don't want any more. Please do not increase my credit at all. And you can put that request in. Also, if you do notice that they have increased it, you can call in and say, please change my limit back down to mm-hmm. where I had it.
So you can
have
be
that
the
option.
Jerk. Unfortunately, you can kind
you
of
can,
be the
you
jerk.
You can do that. Yeah. You can be in control of that.
Yeah, in control, I guess, mm-hmm. is another way of putting it.
Carol Ann,
a better way of putting it.
You look at credit bureaus all the time.
Yes.
What do you see on a credit bureau? I think we all know that there's a score there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What else are you looking at when you see a credit bureau?
So we're looking at addresses. Where have you lived? Is that matching up with what you've put on your application?
So IDing the person?
Yeah, it's a good way of making sure that you're, you are who you say you are, because mortgage fraud does happen. your employer could show up on your credit bureau. Past employers will show up. Also, how many people have been making inquiries on your credit bureau will show up there. So we talked about that. So you don't want to be going around. And people can – that's a good thing for people to check themselves too once a year. Check your own credit bureau to see who has been making inquiries on your credit bureau, because that could be an indication of fraud, somebody trying to steal your identity. They're going around trying to get credit in your name. If you see all these companies that are pulling your credit bureau and you think, well, I've never had discussions with them, right? That's a good thing for you. Your score is on there. If you've had any collections in the past, if you've had bankruptcies, they'll show up.
Is there a charge in Canada to look up your own credit score?
If you want to have your score, yes, there is a fee, Equifax and TransUnion. You can go online and order it. If you just want your report mailed to you without the score, I'm not sure if they're charging a fee.
I know
for
it's
that.
Big in the States. I see the even TV commercials.
You can set up a monthly thing where they will send you something on but that isn't necessarily something that you need to have done.
I just wonder why you had to pay for something that is essentially almost your most private information. Certainly, from a business perspective, it just doesn't make sense to me. But
I believe there's a free one once a year. I think it gave you your score, but it didn't give you all the trade lines and your R values.
Yeah.
But I think it was a summary with a score, because we did it ourselves one year just to say, hey, what's this freebie like?
Yeah.
And it was an incomplete. It was by no means what you're
full
getting.
Report. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the point in not being able to do this? If you want me to get better, if it's going to be something that stands in the way of me moving my family and getting the home I want, why the secrecy on information that's mine?
Well, you can pay to get the full report. So if you're in a bit of trouble and you're trying to
I have no money,
up,
you can give me money.
You can pay for that report.
Yeah,
yeah. All right. Absolutely. All right. So, Carol Ann, what are some not so obvious things that can go on in your life that would negatively affect your credit bureau, your credit score?
So this is something that's maybe most people know, or maybe they don't know, but a lot of people pay their bills online now. And a lot of people will pay them online on the date that the bill is due. But the actual payment isn't being received by the institution on the due date. And that institution can report that as a late payment on your credit bureau, and that will affect your score.
Can, but not necessarily.
Not necessarily, but they can. Cell phone companies are quite quite quick to do that.
So, but in saying that, so the lesson here is maybe build yourself in a couple of days, perhaps a couple of business days. I guess is a key thing. Yep. Friday afternoon is not
exactly right. Usually, when you pay a bill online, it'll tell you exactly when that transaction is going to happen too. But you do want to do it a little bit ahead of time.
Well, the great thing about e-payments is you usually get them much quicker than you did by snail mail. Mm-hmm. As a rule, although I got a Bell bill today, and I don't mind saying Bell, but I got a Bell bill today that was dated March 22nd, and today is the 2nd of April is when I actually received it in the mail. So theoretically, it was 2 weeks old by the time I opened it in the mail. So,
well, folks, we're running out of time here. We need to wrap things up. Carol Ann, thank you so much for joining us, and I know we were just getting into it. We need to get you back, because we could have got into scores and what lenders are looking at for scores for different products, but we'll certainly have to get you to come back. Carol Ann, how can people get in touch with you?
They can reach me online at my website, www.mortgagesatwork.ca. They can call me at 905-372-3344 or drop into the office on Elgin Street.
Thank you very much, Carol Ann.
I just love the fact it's July in this studio. I can't wait for it to be really July. I can't imagine how hot it's going to be in here. But thank you, the listener, for spending part of your morning with us. And we look forward to bringing you more real estate talk next week. Once again, thanks to Carol Ann Bryant for joining us this morning. If you have any questions or comments or any topic suggestions pertaining to real estate, feel free to contact Dave by emailing dave@realityrealty.ca, or you can contact Dale by emailing dale@dalebryant.ca, or call into the radio station, 905-372-2391.
And don't forget to join me, Dale Bryant, real estate broker with Royal LePage, Pro Alliance Realty Brokerage, and Dave Smith, certified home inspector with Pillar to Post Home Inspectors, next Thursday from 11 a.m. until 12 noon for Reality Realty on Northumberland 89.7 FM, truly local radio. Until next week, folks.